Blog Talk Radio.
You find out life's this game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game. Every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch.
Good evening, all, and thank you very much for jumping in with us here on another Frat House Sports' Red Zone Blitz as we take a look at the week that was, week 10 in the NFL. That is, as we approach week 11. And we're going to get into a number of different kind of topics this evening. Yeah, we're going to break a couple of games down, but I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a little more interested in a couple of topics, a couple of things that I see as I pervade the landscape of this NFL in 2015. A couple of things I'm looking at, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't know. It doesn't feel like it's a very compelling sport this year. Is anybody else with me on that one? Can anybody else kind of put their finger on exactly what I'm talking about here? It doesn't exactly feel exciting. Now, look. To consider myself to be a bit of a all-around sort of sports guy. And for the many of you that know me, you know that's pretty much true of Frat House Mike. Yeah, I've got my hometown favorites. And my home team is an absolute mess. The Philadelphia Eagles are a mess. I don't know. I mean, look, pure and simple, four-letter word, they're a mess. But even as I sit around and watch the rest of the league, and we do so much of that here on particularly Sunday here at Frat House Sports, I got to be honest with you, it's not terribly compelling. Now, you know, look, if you're a New England Patriots fan, yeah, they're 9-0. If you're a Carolina Panthers fan, you're sitting there and you're going, holy smokes, where did this season come from? I guess perhaps maybe it's kind of exciting. An Atlanta Falcons team who's 6-3 coming back from the dust that was their division last year along with Carolina. I guess you got to be somewhat kind of excited about it. The Arizona Cardinals walking over an NFC West team or West division that at one time was considered to be the strongest in the entire NFC. They're just walking right through the season. It doesn't feel compelling. And that's just one of the topics I want to get into. We're going to get into that. We're going to get into, well, some of the things that have happened this past weekend. Well, we've seen a lot of change in quarterbacks. A couple of those as a result of, obviously, as a result of injuries. Peyton Manning out. Brock Osweiler's in. Sam Bradford's out. Mark Sanchez in. Okay, both of those, I suppose, are somewhat forgiving. Well, for Denver fans, they might be saying, hey, that injury may have come just a couple of weeks too late. I don't know. But boy, it brings up some interesting questions about the fate of Peyton Manning, at least the immediate future. perhaps maybe even the short-term future. We'll get into some of that. Nick Foles out in St. Louis. They think Case Keenum is, a better answer? I don't know about that one. Johnny Manziel, he's getting his day, I guess, this coming week and for the remainder of the season, as he'll be the starter now up in Cleveland. Rob Ryan was fired in the Big Easy. You got to wonder, is Sean Payton next? We'll talk about that one as well. Joining me, as always, I've got my sidekick Brandon here on Wednesday nights to talk a little bit about the week that was, but more importantly about some of these other topics. I got some numbers here, Brandon, I'm going to be throwing around here, but
okay.
Before I get into that, I don't know. Are you getting what I'm feeling? Do you get a little bit of a sense of what I'm talking about there? Where it just, I don't know. There doesn't seem to be a compelling feeling about this league this year. There doesn't seem to be quite the excitement level. What do you think? Is it just me or?
Well, I think what it is it's the mid-season lull, and you have a lot of teams that are really good and a lot of teams that are really bad. So you don't have division races going on like you normally do, or not very tight divisions like we've seen in the past. I mean, yeah, there's a few exceptions, but I mean, for the most part, you know, the teams that are really good are way out. You can almost tell who's going to be in the playoffs already. There's not going to be, I don't think there's going to be a lot of drama as to who's in and who's out when, you know, we're in the last 2-3 weeks of the season and they start talking about scenarios. I think this season's going to be pretty cut and dry just based on what you see now.
And if you do have any kind of compelling storyline as we get down near the end of the season, it's going to come from those couple of what I would kind of call direct divisions, the AFC South and the
NFC East.
Right. Where right now, it's up for grabs. For God's sake, the Dallas Cowboys are still in it, and the Tennessee Titans at 2-7 are still a factor over in the AFC South. So if you do have any kind of, for God's sake, can you imagine we get into Week 17 and we're flexing for an AFC South game? Can you imagine we'll be flexing for a game like that one? Just to find out who's going to be the team that's going to win that division to go on and represent that division in the playoffs. If anybody out there wants to jump in on this, like I said, we're going to get into some topics before we start breaking games down. And hey, you know what? If the topics take us the whole program, it takes the whole program. I'm fine with that because really, you know, let's get it straight. This is an NFL football program where we're talking about what happened last week, and that is, I mean, this is all part of what is happening right now in the NFL. And if anybody wants to jump in with us, hey, don't hesitate. 347-826-9964. Cell phone, landline, whatever. 347-826-9964. If you are on a computer and you're Skype capable, hit the Skype button next to our program there up at the top. Otherwise, you can jump in the chat room. You can leave us a message there. Or you can hit me up on Twitter at @FrathouseMike, I'll be sending out our poll question here shortly for this evening. Let me give you a couple of numbers, a couple of stats that I went in and I took a look at, kind of did a little math myself. It wasn't difficult to do. These aren't like next level or anything, just things that kind of make you go, something to think about. In just last week's games alone, week 10, 10 of the 14 teams that lost were all favored to win Vegas odds. 10 of 14 lost. So we had 10 upsets in Vegas' eyes last week. That's monstrous. Right now, at this point, at this moment, this very minute right now, 11 of 32 teams are exactly 4-5. 34% of the entire league right now sits with a 4-5 record. That listen, folks, you don't need to be a mathematician. That's one game under 500. So 34% of the teams. Now, a more alarming number, in my opinion, 63% of the league right now is 4-5 or less. So 20 of 32 teams are 4-5 or less right now. And that's with 9 games. In some cases, in a handful, with maybe 2 or 3 cases, there might be 10 games in the books. When you consider for a moment that only 12 of 32 teams make the playoffs, Brandon, it goes directly to the point that you just made. There doesn't seem to be any sort of compelling storyline about who would make the playoffs, because if 20 of 32 teams right now are 4-5, what do you have left? You've got 12 teams. Well, those 12 teams should more than likely be your playoff contenders. Now, of course, we know that's not the case because, excuse me, you got a team like the Indianapolis Colts who are 4-5 and lead their division. In fact, they're actually tied with the Houston Texans. The Indianapolis Colts have got the tiebreaker on that one. So you do have one 4-5 team that would make the playoffs right now. But that still, nonetheless, probably leaves the other 11 teams who would be 5-4 or better right now. There's no compelling storylines. Can we expect any of this to change at any point? It doesn't look that way, right? When you've got two teams right now who are 9-0, and another team, how many teams? We got Cincinnati at 8-1, right? So you got one team at 8-1, two at 9-0, and three teams at 7-2. Go ahead.
Well, I think the NFC North is going to get compelling because you got the Vikings and Green Bay playing this week, and they're both tied at the top of that division right now. Actually, I think Minnesota's ahead now that I think about it. Double checking real quick. Minnesota is a game ahead.
6-3.
That division's going to be interesting. I think Carolina's kind of putting some distance between them and the Falcons, so that one's done. I think Arizona clearly is going to win the West going away. That one's not. As we pointed out, the NFC East is going to be, who knows, the battle of attrition. So, yeah, there's not a lot. And, you know, it's just the two bad divisions, really, that, you know, there's really any question as to who's going to win. And even the wild card, you know, there's not a whole lot. You know, right now there's 2-5-4 teams and 1-6-4 team in the AFC. Other than that, everybody else is 4-5 or worse.
Or less.
So,
right.
I don't think there's much question there.
You and I had a conversation a couple of weeks ago. We got talking. I think, I guess maybe in some respects it was almost irony. Maybe a foreshadowing to this conversation this evening. But you and I had a little bit of a conversation a couple of weeks ago about parity. Parity in the NFL. And, you know, this was something that the NFL always wanted. They wanted parity. We heard the word parity brought up a lot. Excuse me. Oh, I'd say a good 12. I don't even remember it, 15 years ago, maybe even a little bit longer than that. And, of course, we know that with the, you know, free agency era and what have you, that's exactly what has come about. We have parity. How do they refer to them now? The legacy teams.
Dynasty.
Who win the Super Bowl year after year after year after year. It doesn't happen much anymore, if at all. All right, so we got parity. But has it gone too far? I mean, has it gotten to the point of mediocrity now?
Well, I don't know if I go that far, but because I think this year we have, you know, a few teams that are really, you know, head and shoulders above the rest. I mean, I think Carolina, New England, and Cincinnati, as you pointed out, you know, they're clearly good teams. I'm actually surprised that the Houston Texans upset the Bengals this week. I think it maybe was a game where they you know, a quote unquote trap game where they kind of were, yep, in a lull between, you know, some division games and, you know, the Texans, nobody expected them to do anything. And, well, they got caught in the trap. I mean, New England almost got caught, if you think about it. And I don't even know that the Giants, it's hard to call them a trap team because the Giants have always been a thorn in the Patriots' side, as two Super Bowls will show you. But, you know, that game came down to, you know, the last play, for crying out loud.
Mm-hmm.
And you had pointed out there were 10 other upsets, you know, that were upsets. You know, I mean, the Houston game was one of them. You know, New England was almost the 11.
Yeah, well, of course. In fact, we had a number of one-point games this past week. And New England, of course, was one of those. New England won 27-26. I think at times there were times you and I were both kind of thinking, well, that game might actually end up in overtime. And you know, we're going to get into that. You know, if we get to it, we're going to get to that whole conversation about, you know, what the hell is it with the Giants and their kind of hold over the New England Patriots. But you talk about a team like Carolina, and because Carolina was as poor as they were last year, performance-wise, they got the benefit of a fairly easy schedule. And look, Brandon, I hate to use schedules as an excuse, because in my opinion, when you get to this level, when you get to the NFL, I don't care how bad you are, you're an NFL team. But seriously, the Panthers have played the Jaguars, the Texans, the Saints, the Buccaneers. Those were their first four games at the beginning of the season. All right, they had to play the Seahawks. All right, there's a tough one. They had to play the Eagles. Some people thought, okay, well, the Eagles could be a tough one. They had to play the Colts. People thought the Colts would be a tough one. The Packers. All right, so they had four right there in a row. But then we're going to go Titans, Redskins, Cowboys, Saints, Falcons. They've been the beneficiary of a pretty good team. We've looked at Cam Newton's numbers. His numbers are not lights out. We're not talking Tom Brady numbers. We're not even talking Drew Brees numbers when it comes to Cam Newton. This team, the Carolina Panthers, I mean, can we really say they're a good team? Or are they the beneficiaries of a mediocre schedule?
Maybe a little bit, but I wouldn't take a lot away from them, because they got a pretty good defense, and you know, you still got to play what's served. I mean, you have no real say in your schedule. You know, it's not like college where you can line up, you know, the little sisters of the poor on the, you know, your off weeks, you know, right, and blow them out 70-0. You know, the schedule's kind of preset based on where you finish. You know you're going to have your four division games, or six division games rather, and then you're going to have four against, you know, one division of each conference, you know, or three. Well, no, it'd be four. You have two home, two away, and then the other games are determined based on where you finish in relation to others finish. So, you know, there's not a whole lot of mystery, you know, in the schedule, and it's not like Carolina, you know, did anything out of the ordinary, you know what I mean? They're doing the best with what they got. Well, and you got to give them credit. And their defense is, you know, a big part of their success. Yeah, Cam Newton may not have lights out numbers, but Cam Newton, I think, has shown he's more of a leader this year than he's ever been before.
Agreed. I would agree there.
I mean, more than the stats. Let's just say that.
No, you're absolutely right. There's a maturity level to Cam Newton this year that we had not seen prior. That is, unless you're the mother of a 9-year-old who wants to write him a horrible letter about, you know, end zone dances, which is just stupid. Thank you. That'll probably come up on tomorrow night's 4 Minutes of Football. But you just made the phrase, though. You said they haven't done anything really out of the ordinary. And I'd have to go digging. I'd have to go back and do an in-depth search to see. It doesn't seem to me that the Panthers added anything necessarily to their roster this year that one could necessarily point to and say, hey, you see that guy, or you see those two guys over there? That's the difference this year versus last year with the Panthers. You understand?
I think
you
could make an argument that they're a little worse. You could make an argument they're worse, because Kelvin Benjamin tore an ACL in preseason, and D'Angelo Williams is now carrying a football in Pittsburgh. Yeah, they didn't replace either one of those two. You know, I mean, Jonathan Stewart, is taking on a bigger role as a, you know, a primary lead back. But, you know, I thought, you know, they actually ran the ball pretty good as a pair for many, many years down there with D'Angelo Williams. And you could almost make an argument that the team's on paper worse, but they seem to be better overall.
All the more reason.
I mean, they had Greg Olsen. They've had Greg Olsen at tight end for years, who's Cam's favorite target. You know, and clearly that connection works well, you know, and we had pointed out Stewart, and they've had Mike Tolbert, you know, for the goal line stuff for a long time. And he, you know, so that I think it's just, you know, a gelling factor, and Cam Newton is just not making dumb boneheaded mistakes like he has in the past. He's playing a lot more mature. He's clearly leading the offense and probably the whole team, you know, essentially, by, you know, his performances. And you got to, I think that's what you point to more so than, you know, they had the big free agent signing. I think we're finding more in the NFL that the big free agent signing tends to blow up in people's faces more so than help them. Look at the Colts. They signed Frank Gore, Andre Johnson, all that. And what did it get them? They're worse than they were at last year.
Oh, yeah, you know? Far worse.
So, you know, it looks nice and shiny and new when you have the big signing. You know, I think on defense, like a defensive signing can be more impactful than offense. I think the offense, I think that the bottom line is you just got to build it, you know, build it from the draft and, you know, maybe plug in a piece or two from free agency, but don't expect, you know, miracles. And I think that's maybe some of the issues you see with other teams and Carolina's there. The argument is, I think they've done it right way. They have the same core on offense that they've had for a long time, you know, and they're just, you know, making do with, you know, a few little pieces at receiver that, you know, they had no choice but to. Was their number one pick from a year ago was on the shelf.
Interesting, though, kind of bolstering up my argument, though, about the fact that, you know, they're the beneficiary of a mediocre league and a mediocre schedule.
That may be true, and they do play in a division that's not the greatest. I mean, the Falcons are pretty good, but short of that, I mean, the Saints and Buccaneers are just terrible.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so, you know, but there's nothing Carolina, you know, can control about any of that. You know, they can't control the schedule. They can't control, you know, how good the teams in their division are. And, yeah, I don't know off the top of my head. We'd have to look to see which division they drew, you know, from the AFC as their opponent this year. They might have got a nice ball with that. I mean, you just ran down their schedule. I don't know. Do you see which teams stick out that you have all four of one AFC division?
Colts.
Yeah, AFC South.
Colts,
there you go.
Yep.
So there you go. They got the weakest division
in the AFC. Right.
Yep.
Right.
So, you know, nothing. It's not like Carolina said, "Oh yeah, we're playing them this year." Like they have no say in it. That's a rotation thing that's preset. So, you know, I'm not going to hold their schedule against them.
Okay, but let me ask you this.
I don't think you can. I don't think that's fair.
Let me ask you this personally. And you and I both, we both remember the days of the San Francisco 49ers and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Those days of the dynasty teams, as you're talking about, as you mentioned before. Is what we have today better? Or was it better then?
I don't know. I think it's more compelling from the sense that, you know, as a fan base, your team can go from, you know, the Falcons last year to the Falcons this year, and you don't have to wait, you know, 4 or 5 years like you used to before. You know, I mean, when you had the dynasty eras, you know, you probably can tell just from being, you know, an Eagles fan. I mean, when Dallas was good in the mid-90s with Aikman and Emmitt Smith and Michael Irvin and Mark Bavaro and all of them, you know, the Eagles weren't that good. And even then, it took a longer time to get good again. You know, and now
– that's true.
The way the league is now and with the way stuff rotates around and, you know, you do have a lot more player turnover on most teams than you would back then. I think that that leads to giving the fan base hope if you're in a year like this year for a lot of teams. I mean, there's a lot of teams right now. I think there's more bad teams than good teams right now.
Well,
and
yeah,
that may
there's
lead,
no doubt about
that
it.
May lead, that may lead to some of your what you said about compelling, because, you know, watching two bad teams play is not compelling. And, you know, Monday night we had to do that with the Chargers and who was it, the Titans and Chargers,
Texans.
I think.
Texans.
No, the Texans played Cincinnati on Monday. So, yeah,
Cincinnati,
I don't know, maybe it was last week.
Okay. There,
last week, I think on Monday night, we had two bad teams, too. It's just like, you know, when you call them up, just, you know, I guess, because, mm-hmm. you know, you got, you know, a 2-7 team playing against a 4-5 team. Who really cares? Nobody's going to the playoffs out of that. So.
That is unless
I don't know.
You're coming
from
the AFC West.
Yeah, but as the year goes, I think you're going to see more. I think you'll see it because we already looked at the schedule and we know there's some good teams that have to play each other. I mean, we already talked on other shows that, you know, New England and Denver have to play. Denver and Cincinnati have to play. I think you'll see some of those matchups and you'll get some compelling, you know, exciting football because those are going to be like, you know, AFC seed determiners. You know, that's, you know, as good as it gets, really, when you start getting – in the last quarter of the season.
Let me throw one conversation nugget out there for you for a moment. And then we'll start to move it around here a little bit. We talked about it on our Frat House Sports Show, our flagship program, which folks, everybody, you can hear that one here on Thursday nights, 7 PM Eastern time live, our flagship program, the Frat House Sports Show, airing tomorrow night, 7 PM Eastern time. But we've talked about it on a couple of our other Frat House Sports shows, Braden. When the NBA at the end of last season or in the off season, this past year, Adam Silver came out and made the decision to change the playoff format. And I remember a conversation between our good friend Matt DeBias and myself and how the decision was made to move away from the division style playoff setup to going and just basically for all intent purposes eliminating the divisions from the playoff conversation and just ranking by basically conference. What would you think about something like that in the mix in the NFL, whereby it no longer becomes a situation where you've got to win your division. So therefore I'm a 4-5 team going into week 11. I'm a 4-5 team like Indianapolis, and I'm sitting there going, oh, well, all I got to do is worry about my division. That's all I got to worry about.
I think that would be bad for the NFL, and I'll tell you why, because I think the NFL works the rivalry thing better than any other league. And when I say any other league, I mean across all the divisions. I mean, you can pick every division in the NFL and find a great rivalry. I mean, you know, Chicago, Green Bay, you know, any of the NFC East teams are really good rivalries anyway, however you want to line it up. You know, New England Jets. You know,
yep.
Every division out there, I mean, even the Raiders and Broncos in the West, you can
Seattle,
find
San Fran.
Good.
Seattle, San Fran.
Yep. I mean, you can go down a list. And, yes, you'll find some in the other leagues like the NBA and the NHL. I mean, you'll always have, you know, some classic rivalries. But I don't think you have it across the board like you do in the NFL. In the NFL, I think the divisions matter more. And you got, because the way the schedule is formatted right now, you're going to play them twice no matter what. So they got to have more meaning. And I think if you took the division winner out, you'd give up some of that meaning. And I think it would, you know, take away from. You said the league already seemed not that compelling this year. You take division rivalries out of it, you have even less compelling. You know, then
yeah.
You're basically playing fantasy football at that
mm-hmm.
point.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason people are watching anymore at that point. I mean,
well, do you think that there would be a fan base backlash to it?
I don't
In
think
other
you'd
words-
ever see it. I think the owners would backlash before. I don't
okay.
think you'd ever have the owners agree that, you know, a division winner doesn't make the playoffs. I don't think you'll ever see that in the NFL, personally. I don't think the owners would allow it. You know, let's face it, you know, whatever Goodell wants to do, he still reports to 32 other guys. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, he may think that, you know, if he does think that's a good idea, I don't see it. I don't see it working in the NFL. I think it takes away too much.
And, as it's going right now, where we have not one. Well, I guess we really had two last year too, though, didn't we? We had the NFC South and we had the AFC South, were two weak divisions. We have two weak divisions again. It's the NFC East this year and the AFC South.
I think the Colts were a pretty high seed, though, last year. They were like 13-3. I think they were the 3 seed.
Them, right, but besides them, everybody else in that division was
absolutely
horrible.
Well, yeah.
But we've got two weak divisions right now. Are we going to have a 7-9 team get into the playoffs this year?
Probably. I think the NFC East is going to give you one. I think the Colts are going to end up being 500 or better when it's all said and done. I think that because I just don't see them losing enough of the division games they have left to not get to that number. So I think the Colts will, you know, they'll be 9-7. I don't know if you'll see a 10-6, but, you know, they'll be 9-7 or 8-8. They're not going to be 7-9. I don't think we're going to see that.
Wow.
Out of that, okay. The NFC East, you absolutely may see that. And that's the part that I think, you know, concerning if you're a fan of a team in that league, in that division. I mean, you kind of mentioned it. It's like the NFC South was last year. And look at it this year. Now you got two good teams in there. So, you know, it can change.
Well, Dallas would be running away with this division if
Romo
had not missed.
Take away the injuries, absolutely.
Right. If Romo had not missed 7 weeks, and I think Romo's back this week, for that game, excuse me, which is why that game against Miami is a mere 1-point spread on it. And we'll talk about that game. I believe that's on our docket for tomorrow evening. But Romo, I believe, is back this week. But if Romo had been in there for the full stretch, there's no doubt in my mind that the Dallas Cowboys would be leading this division, probably followed by the New York Giants, and then you can whittle it down from there. Again, I throw it out if anybody wants to jump in. 347-826-9964. 347-826-9964. Otherwise, hit us up on Skype from Blog Talk Radio, or jump in the chat room and give us a comment there from Blog Talk Radio, or you can hit me up on Twitter at Frathouse Mike. And again, before we get into, I guess, kind of talking about a few games, Brandon, some of the quarterback movement that we saw this past week that's actually going to be affecting Week 11. Peyton Manning was pulled, I guess, shortly after, what was it? Well, it was before halftime, I think, wasn't it? It was before halftime, and
no, it was right after halftime, right in the middle of the third quarter. Because
okay.
I remember the commentator said, you know, I would have thought about this maybe at the beginning of the fourth quarter, but not this early. But then after that is when they found, you know, that it might have been, you know, because they weren't claiming it was an injury removal on air, and the Broncos were not admitting that he was hurt. And then all of a sudden.
Right. We never heard anything about an injury until Monday, when,
correct,
in fact, what we heard then was that he's got a, well, he's essentially suffering from plantar fasciitis, or it's actually worse than fasciitis because it's actually a torn plantar fasciosus, however it's pronounced, in his foot, And I think there's a couple other bangs and bruises and what have you. Nonetheless, Peyton Manning went 5-20 the other day in that game for 35 yards and 4 interceptions. Absolute. I mean, he had a 0.0 QB rating, obviously. All right, Brock Osweiler came in, didn't do badly. Coming in behind him, 14-24 for 146 yards. He had a touchdown. He had another interception. Denver had a hell of a lot of turnovers, obviously, in that game. five through the air. I'm just looking to see real quick. Did they have any fumbles? Did they have any fumbles lost? No, they didn't. Okay. So, but Peyton Manning, we've talked about Peyton Manning all season long, and we've talked about his early struggles. And then, of course, you know, one of the things you had indicated was, well, you thought perhaps maybe the bye might do him good. And, well, we had the bye, and he came back. He looked a little bit better. What's your gut feeling on this one at this point? This is, you know, I've read a lot of analysts, some analysts saying right now, you know, there's no doubt about it. This guy is done. That perhaps maybe one of the best things he possibly could do to kind of go out with a little bit of grace would be to maybe perhaps even retire now. Even at this point in the season, just announce I'm going to go the way it is. You know, he broke the record the other day, just barely set the record for what is it, most yards in a career, at over 71,000, I believe. What's your gut on Peyton Manning? I mean, one of the questions that I put up on our Facebook page the other day, and if anybody wants to follow us over there, please don't hesitate. Frat House Sports, leave spaces in between to look for our little purple icon and give us a like. But one of the questions I put up there the other day was a question that you actually posed. I forget if it was here or on our on our Thursday night program, but you posed a question a couple of weeks ago. If, in fact, you know, could, in fact, Peyton come back next season for one more year, in a completely different uniform? And I kind of dismissed it and said, no, I don't think so. But I guess the question I throw out there now is, let's just say for a moment that Peyton Manning doesn't see the field again for the remainder of this season.
I don't think he will. I'll tell you that straight out.
Might he then opt to go to another team and end his career there, doing kind of a goodbye tour sort of thing with, as you say, a team that, well, I don't know, you know, could they be perhaps a playoff contending team, but maybe not a Super Bowl team? Well, go ahead. Give us your thoughts. You're saying you don't think he plays again this season.
No, I think the Broncos want to see what Brock Osweiler, barring Brock Osweiler being absolutely terrible or getting hurt, I don't think they're gonna switch back at this point, because I read that this is like a 6-week injury, and do the math. The 6 weeks puts you at the end of the year for the most part. You know what I mean? I mean, you're gonna switch quarterbacks after you get Brock Osweiler back? And here's the other part that I find interesting. You know, he keeps getting different injuries at that point. So I think what you're seeing at this point now is, you know, his body just can't recover quickly, and he's more susceptible to, you know, some injuries than he has been in the past. So, you know, I think that's probably, you know, the long and short of it.
Well, what of the idea, because you had mentioned it, what of the idea of, you know, and I would say you'd have to have a team, you'd have to identify a team that perhaps maybe, well, you had brought up the Bears. That might be a good example. What of a team like a Bears team that could afford a year to kind of still get themselves up and running before they would ever get to a point of really being perhaps maybe a playoff contending team or maybe a first round playoff contending team, but they know they're not going to be much more than that. What of Peyton Manning going to another team next year? What do you think the possibilities are of that based upon what you believe now? That is that he doesn't see another down this season.
Well, I think there's only one place, Chicago, with, you know, John Fox and Adam Gase. I don't think he'd want to try to play another different offense or hybrid offense of what he knows and likes. I think Chicago's the only choice. And it makes sense on both sides if his body can take it, you know, because Jay Cutler clearly is done He's only there because they're stuck with him. Yep. And Chicago has some good pieces. I mean, they got Matt Forte if they keep him. The other running back is looking pretty good. Yep. You know, Alshon Jeffrey, when he's healthy, you know, what's the word?
He's very effective.
Yes, he's a threat, you know, and they have Martellus Bennett at tight end. I think there's a lot of pieces in place already in Chicago. That,
they need
you know,
an offensive line. They need an offensive
line.
Well,
they, you know, that you can, they could draft one, two, maybe. And you know, signing an offensive lineman in free agency isn't necessarily a bad thing. That seems to work pretty well. It's the skill positions where you seem to see issues. I don't know.
You're not paying.
I'm just guessing.
Big bucks. It's not big bucks. Offensive lineman. You're not talking. You're not talking Boku dollars on offensive
right.
line. No, you're right there. I'm just thinking to myself, and I remember when you brought the concept up of him, you know, potentially playing in a different uniform. And I remember exactly what my response was, and it might have even just been last week or the week before that you brought it up. And I said, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see Peyton Manning play another season because it's been painful to watch this one. But it just seems to me that this is such an ignominious way, potentially, of going out. And recognizing that, hey, look, make no mistake. Peyton Manning's got an ego, all right? You don't need any more example of that than just some of the sign language between him and his backup, Brock Osweiler. I mean, these guys are not exactly chummy and going out and having a beer after a game. You can see that. So make no mistake that Peyton Manning's got an ego, and you could see where he would say, you know, gosh darn it. And that's exactly the way Peyton Manning would say it. He would say, gosh darn it. I'm not going to end my career this way. I want one more good full year. And as much as we might not think it's a great idea, and as much as it might sound like a Brett Favre type of move, you got to sit back and look around and go, could this guy be effective? What, at the age of 40? He would be 40, definitely. He might be approaching 41. Could he be effective for a team like, say, the Chicago Bears? Interesting concept. Interesting concept. I don't know.
It depends on his physical. That's my biggest thing right now, you know, on his physical body, how he's doing. Because, you know, he keeps getting these different injuries. Last year he had, quadricep muscle injury on both legs. You know, this year it's the plantar fasciitis thing. You know, we know his history with his neck. He's never been he's a tall, you know, big quarterback from the, you know, height point of view, but he's never been very muscular. He's always looked kind of scrawny, if you ask, you know, me. I don't, he never struck me as, yeah, he's never struck me as a, you know, a gym rat compared to some of these other guys. I mean, I'm not saying Tom Brady's, you know, the Incredible Hulk or anything, but, I think he's in a little better shape than Peyton is at this point in his career.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
well, it's an interesting prospect. I don't know where it goes, but we know this much. We got Brock Osweiler coming in this coming week, and Denver is actually going to be playing. I believe they're playing Chicago. Ironically enough, I believe that's the case, right? I think that's a game I threw at everybody to take a look at for this week. Chicago, yes, Denver is at Chicago this coming week. Kind of a shame that in some respects, as you're bringing up Chicago, that they're not going to, well, not that John Fox needs to necessarily get a look at Peyton Manning. I mean, I think John Fox knows what Peyton Manning is. Kind of a shame that we're not going to get a chance to see that. One of the other head-scratching moves I wanted to get your opinion on real quick. Nick Foles out of this week. Case Keenum in for St. Louis. That kind of came as a bit of a shock to me.
I think that was a quick trigger, personally.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on there. Nick Foles right now ranked 29th in the league in yardage by a quarterback. Operating at a 57% completion rate, average completion 7 yards, seven touchdowns, six interceptions, and a 75.9 passer rating. I was actually trying to find, and I'm not finding them, I don't know why, where Sam Bradford's number, oh, Sam Bradford is ranked 13th. All right, so interesting. Go ahead. What's your thought on this one? I don't know. Like I said, I was a little bit surprised by it. St. Louis right now is 4-5. They're still in the conversation technically in the West. I don't know. What do you
don't understand it either, because there was talks, you know, before that they were ready to give, you know, Foles a contract extension. That, you know, he's not lit it up, but I don't think he's played exceptionally poor. You know, I don't know if there's more to the story or not that Fisher's wanting to go to Case Keenum. I don't think he's, you know, he isn't anything of any, you know, big mystery. He's been around long enough and had a lot of chances and not really done a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand it really. We'll have to see. Maybe there's, you know, some level of injury again. See, I think that a lot of teams are playing fast and loose with the injury reporting this year, and the NFL needs to do something to kind of rein that back in, because I think we're seeing this more and more where, you know, we had the Andrew Luck stuff earlier. Clearly Peyton Manning's had some issues. They said he shouldn't have, you know, they said after the fact that he should have not even played, you know, that he was that hurt prior to it, and he wasn't on any injury report for anything, like not for what actually his problem was. Maybe there's something, you know, Foles is dinged up and we're not getting a whole picture.
Hmm.
It doesn't make much sense. If you think about it, it really doesn't make that much sense. It's not like Case Keenum's like it's going to be a huge upgrade. I don't see how that's even possible. You know what I mean?
Haven't we seen this kind of quick trigger from Jeff Fisher in the past? Particularly when it comes to the QB position. Now, I mean,
possibly,
you know,
but you know, it's hard to tell, year, especially with the Rams. He's always dealt with injuries.
Yeah, I was going to say, last year, of course, was injury-riddled for him. So I guess maybe that's the recent memory I've got with him. You know, you got to wonder, is Jeff Fisher long for these Rams or what? I don't know, because, you know, we follow the Rams here fairly closely because of Sidekick, but and there was a lot of anticipation for many of us here when Jeff Fisher took over that team. Boy, he's not been. I mean, I don't know what you just hasn't worked out. I don't know. He just doesn't.
I think his issue's been quarterback, though. He hasn't had the quarterback, you know, healthy, playing, you know, maybe the right one. I mean, Bradford may have been, if he could play through a year without getting hurt. I mean, clearly, I mean, he's on the shelf now. Now it's a different injury, and, you know, it's a non-throwing shoulder AC joint. So, you know, who knows how long he'll be out. I think the bigger question is going to be as Mark Sanchez plays better, they'll stick with him. Chip Kelly seems to have no clue what he's doing. No plan, no nothing. At least maybe Fisher's, I don't know, maybe he's grasping at straws. Maybe he's seeing, you know, his shot at a wild card going up in smoke, and he's figuring, well, I got, you know, this card, I might as well try it. I don't know. I don't see the Rams getting rid of him. I think he's a very good coach, but you
so
might be right.
So do I.
You may be correct.
I don't know. It just is. It just seems really, really odd to me. You know,
solid defense. They've clearly built a great defense.
Yeah, and they really have for the past couple of seasons. I was just looking to see what they lost that game last week pretty badly to the Redskins, 47-14.
No, that was one of those fluky games, though. I mean, I don't think the Redskins are all that. You see this every once in a while where a team will, you know, just blow somebody out.
I'm wrong on that. That was the Saints that lost that game 47-14. Where's the Rams? The Rams lost to the Bears 37-13 to the Bears.
Right.
So that, my mistake on that one. But I just looking up what Nick Foles' numbers were. 17 of 36, 200 yards, no touchdowns, one interception, a 53.0 passer rating. These aren't horrible numbers. They're actually pretty typical of Nick Foles. I guess in some respects that's kind of why one's a little bit surprised in that game again. I guess because St. Louis was behind for so much of the game, Gurley never really became too much of a part of it. Todd Gurley only had 45 yards on the ground with 12 carries, but he did have a touchdown. But St. Louis and Chicago were tied 10-10 going into the second quarter, but then Chicago blew it open in the second quarter, put two touchdowns up on the board, and it was 24-10 going into the half. So I guess St. Louis never really got the ground game going the way that they've been able to in the past couple of games because of the fact they were behind. So they were throwing the ball.
Right.
I don't think Nick Foles' numbers from this particular game are any less representative of what we've seen from Nick Foles in the past. That's just my personal opinion, but
I agree with you. I think this is a quick decision, or there's more to this than we know.
Mm-hmm.
There may be an injury or something that we don't know, or that there may be more to this story, or maybe there's just some kind of disconnect between the coach and the player, maybe the offensive coordinator and Foles. Who knows? I don't know. I don't know if it's a clash that's going on behind the scenes that we're not aware of. But
mm-hmm.
I don't think that Case Keenum gives you. There's no upside. There's no upside at all. And matter of fact, I see downside here is the fact that, you know, you should try to show confidence in Foles and see if he's going to be your quarterback of the future. You know, you're just kind of giving up now, essentially. I don't know if I like the message being sent by Fisher to Foles.
It reminds
you know what
me
I'm saying?
Of some of the reminds me of some of the revolving door stuff that we see going on with teams like the Cleveland Browns, where Mike Patton can't seem to make up his mind who the heck he wants under center. It reminds me of what you see going on with the Houston Texans, where they can't seem to figure out from one season to the next, let alone with inside of one season what they want to do with the quarterback position from one to the next. I it's crazy when you get these kinds of teams that operate that way. You know, we talk about it jokingly on on our Fantasy Friday program on Friday nights, you know, about the streaming defenses. We actually have NFL coaches out there that are streaming quarterbacks for real. I mean, that's just crazy. I mean, seriously, honest to God, you can't build a program that way, guys. I don't know what you know.
The problem is there's only so many, you know, quote-unquote franchise quarterbacks out there. And even at that, you have your A-level, B-level, C-level. You know, franchise quarterbacks. I mean, I think you clearly have your Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning in his prime level. Then you have the Andy Dalton, Joe Flacco, Matt Ryan level, you know, and then you go down to the rest, you know, the serviceable, the Ryan Fitzpatricks, maybe throw Jay Cutler in there. I don't even know if I'd call him a starter in the NFL, but he is, but you know what I'm saying? There's just not that many good ones out there. And it's hard to find them. It's not like you can just pluck one off the tree. You know what I mean? So
no doubt about that one.
I think that's been Houston's problem. They thought Schaub was their guy, and Schaub fell apart. I don't even know if he's a backup in the league anymore.
Well, yeah, I thought I read that he was someplace.
Yeah, I thought so too. But I think maybe out in Oakland behind Carr. I don't think he's. He's no dangerous seeing the field. That
with
much
due respect,
I know.
With due respect, he's not worth my time to go look up the depth chart.
I hear you.
But no, you're absolutely right. I got you on that one. If I'm not mistaken, I just heard you put the. Did you just put the Red Rifle in the sub A group? Oh, my goodness gracious.
Until he can prove he can win a playoff game, I'm not putting him in the A level. He's like 0-6 in the playoffs. I mean, you got to win a game, Dalton, before you're getting into the top level. At least Joe Flacco has a couple of rings, for crying out loud. Or at least one. I mean, he may not have two, but he has one. You know, and he's looked pretty good at times. So, yeah, I'd put Flacco above him before that. I mean,
look at there.
Yeah, that was always my gripe about Peyton Manning. You know, he did finally win a Super Bowl, but he lost. His playoff record was, you know, like 75% of the time he went out round one. I mean, that's just terrible. And, you know, we had that argument at nauseam for many times. So,
yes.
You know,
yes.
Dalton needs to get himself out of that and start winning a playoff game or two. But, you know, this year, you can't argue with the way he's playing in a regular season anyway.
No. I as much as I hate to admit it, all right, you heard it there. You heard it there, Dalton. You know, you got to come out in the playoffs. You can't come out there and be a red rider BB gun like J.J. Watt said.
Never. Right. He needs to win. I mean more than one. You know, I'd like to see, by rights, if you look at the league right now, the best AFC championship game would be the Patriots and Bengals, in my book. Because I really don't think Denver's all that. You know, they have their record's all right, but I don't think they're going to, you know, I don't think they got, their defense is good, but I don't think it can carry them in the playoffs.
It was interesting when we saw that graphic put up there on Monday night, on the Monday Night Football game. And I don't know whether you took note of it or not there, Brandon, but in the history of the Cincinnati Bengals, Andy Dalton has the highest win percentage of any quarterback that's ever played under center for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Oh, I believe that. I did see that. I mean, you know, short of like 1 or 2 years with Ken Anderson, they've never had a quote-unquote
good
quarterback.
Thought,
I mean, rumor Esiason, maybe.
You would have thought Esiason, right. You would have thought Esiason.
But they lost.
Listen,
they lost with him a lot, too.
I remember.
You know, they had a lot of them.
Yeah, but I remember some great, great games back in, I guess, what it would have been, the early to mid-'80s. Great games with Boomer Esiason back there. I remember some really good games. But I don't know. Maybe those are they're just a handful of those that are sticking out in my mind. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe I'm being influenced by just a handful of those games. Anyhow. So, I mean, look, I got to give the devil his due myself. I'm not a big fan of Andy Dalton's. I never have been. I've always kind of thought he was a bit of a fraud. But there it is. You know, anyhow. We got about 30 minutes remaining in the program. We're going to run around. We're going to take a look at a couple of games. Obviously, we're not going to get to all of them, so I'll pick out a handful of these that were actually the most compelling. And if anybody wants to jump in with us, you have plenty of time. 347-826-9964. 347-826-9964. Or hit me up over on Twitter. I got our Frat House Sports Poll going out right now. We just got done talking about quarterbacks, and I'm putting the question out there. Is this Peyton Manning's final season? There it is. There's the Frat House Sports Poll. Get over to Twitter, at Frat House Mike, and participate in that one, or, like I said, give us a comment. Brandon, the Green Bay Packers, is it time no longer to RELAX? I don't know. They've lost three in a row. They went down to the Detroit Lions last week, 18-16. Aaron Rodgers put the ball in the air 61 times. Are you kidding me? Well, he did complete 35 of them, 333 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, and he ended up with a 83.6 passer rating. You know, for all the brouhaha there was about James Starks, he was going to be taking over the ground game. You know, people kind of thought, oh, okay, Eddie Lacy ain't getting the job done. We'll see a lot of yardage on the ground. No, that wasn't the case. Lacy only picked up 42 yards, less than three yards a carry he had. But boy, oh boy, 333 yards in the air But Brandon, this Green Bay team looked like they looked like they were horrible looking. I mean, seriously, they were just completely ineffective against a really bad Detroit Lions team. I mean, seriously, this Detroit Lions team is bad. I don't know. You can't talk about this as a game where they were looking ahead. They had lost two in a row. Now they're three in a row. I mean, and they're now in second place in the division, a game behind the Minnesota Vikings. What do you make of the Green Bay Packers? You know, beginning of the season, you and I are coming on here. We're saying there is no better quarterback right now in the NFC than Aaron Rodgers. And just the other day, I'm opening up USA Today Sports, and there's no less than two articles in there about what's ailing Aaron Rodgers. What do you make of it?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. You know, this was a division game, this particular game against the Lions, and we all know that, you know, division teams and rivalries get up for each other, whether or not they're good or bad. We've seen New England struggle with a bad Dolphins and a bad Jets team for how many years, you know, from time to time. So that's part of it. I think part of the other issue is the way the schedule played out for Green Bay. I think, you know, they had a rough patch. They had to go to Denver. They had to go to Carolina. And, you know, when they're playing that caliber of team on the road consecutive weeks, that's a little rough. So, yeah, okay, they've now lost three games in a row. But they've lost three games in a row to two really good teams, division-leading teams, and a division rival. So, yeah, they need to stop the bleeding. I'm not going to say that, but I'm not going to say, you know, that they have any major problems. I still think they're going to be, you know, they're going to definitely be in the NFC Championship game. They're probably going to be the NFC team. You know what? I think they're going to outlast Minnesota, and I'll give away
and
a little
Arizona?
Bit, I think.
And Arizona?
Yeah, Arizona. Well, I don't know. Maybe that's your NFC title game. You know, it's Green Bay and Arizona, and you know, maybe Arizona has the better record and goes to the Super Bowl. That could work. That could be. But I think Green Bay is definitely, you know, number two, at least, in the NFC. And I think they're going to pass Minnesota, and they're going to win the division. I think they're going to win this game. Maybe I'm giving away a little bit of something for tomorrow's show, but, you know, I think Green Bay comes back after three in a row and, you know, kind of quiet some critics with a win this week.
They got to go into Minnesota this week.
I know. I know. They've not had the best of schedule, though. You got to give Green Bay a little flack.
I hear you.
4 weeks now, three of them were on the road, and they're all against division leader teams. That's tough. But I think Green Bay, I think they see, you know, they're going to be a little more desperate. Maybe they didn't.
No,
maybe
they,
as you pointed out, they were trying to look past Detroit to that Minnesota game a little bit, you know, and that's never a good thing to do, especially to a division team.
Nope, it was a division team, and you're coming off of two losses in a row.
Yep.
That was if in fact that's exactly what happened, it was absolutely the wrong time, the worst time for it to happen. Absolutely the worst time for it to happen.
Well, look at it like this. This could be the wake-up call. You know what I mean? It could be the wake-up call that drives them to, you know, a Super Bowl run.
Well, I guess.
Or at least an NFC championship game.
I guess we'll see on how that all plays out. But, I mean, I'll tell you, in some respects, there's got to be a lot of people out there that are loving it simply because, you know, everybody's so conditioned to think that, well, hey, Green Bay's going to be there. Green Bay's going to be there. And now, suddenly, my God, you've got Minnesota leading the NFC North with a 7-2 record. Green Bay at 6-3. Chicago Bears are still afloat at 4-5. And as you look around the league, you know, you got Carolina, like you talked about, like we talked about earlier, at 9-0. Arizona at 7-2. So, it's shaping up rather interesting for at least those 11 teams that we talked about at the very beginning of the show who are sitting up at the top. Very, very interesting setup for the Green Bay Packers. And yes, that game will be fascinating, and we will get into that one. That'll be one of our picks of the week. Excuse me, for tomorrow night. And the last I did check on the line on that one, that is still a pick'em game.
That's the Green Bay line.
Yeah, that's a Green Bay line. Yep.
The odds makers, the money is going on Green Bay, even though it's in Minnesota. Because, you know, it's I'm not trying to diminish Minnesota. They've had a nice season.
That should be a 2.5 point Minnesota line.
Yep.
Under normal circumstances. I mean, under the best circumstances, it's 3 or better. But at minimally, all right, you got a good team coming into your house. You could see the line fluttering around 2, 2.5. Right now, it's still a pick 'em. Mm-mm-mm. Yep, that's a Green Bay line. I agree with you. Couldn't agree with you more. all right, let's go take a look at that. Let's take a look at that New England game. We brought it up a little bit earlier. I brought it up a little bit earlier. Green Bay just barely got away with keeping their unbeaten record intact at 9-0 as they traveled into New York and came out of there with a 1-point victory, 26-27. Brandon, this was a nail-biter. Tom Brady was 26-42, 334 yards. Nice. I mean, that's nice. He wasn't just throwing the ball. We weren't getting little 3 and 4 yard dinks. He was averaging 8 yards a pass. 2 touchdowns, 1 interception, 92.8 pass rating. LeGarrette Blount had 66 yards on the ground. Where did that ground game come from for New England all of a sudden? Surprisingly, they ran the ball on a Giants team that has a pretty good run defense, Brandon. Was that the secret, keeping them off balance that way?
Well, New England got dealt a pretty bad blow when Deion Lewis went down with the ACL for the year. He was their primary back, and he was running in, catching out of the backfield. So, yeah, they've had to adapt their offense a little bit and go back to a more power game with Blount running the ball. And they did pretty well. You know, I mean, they clearly were the Deion Lewis thing was I don't know if it was a preseason experiment that just went really well. He was lighting up the, you know, every game. And, you know, so they've had to change a little bit. But I think they've adapted well. I mean, LeGarrette Blount has been a good back for them, and I think he's going to continue to have a decent year. I think that they can adapt. The other problem is the Patriots have had a couple injuries on the offensive line. So that isn't helping the situation with, you know, changing it over. So, you know, that's just a little bit of what's going on. I think this, as you pointed out, was a nail biter. It goes down to a game winning field goal at the end.
Yep.
And if I'm remembering, it was upwards of 50 yards. It wasn't a chip shot for sure. So, you know, it was exciting. And being a Patriots fan, obviously I was on the edge of my seat, you know, I wanted to, I cannot stand the Giants, probably because of the two fluky catches in Super Bowls and stuff like that. They're kind of a thorn in the side, and I can never really figure out why. I don't know, maybe because Belichick was a defensive coordinator when they won. It's the revenge, he can't beat them. I don't know. Karma, is it a karma thing because Belichick was the defensive coordinator for the Giants Super Bowls, you know, early Super Bowls with, you know, like Phil Simms and them in that era, LT, with Parcells as the head coach, but, you know, Belichick was the defensive coordinator. So maybe the karma is saying, okay, you can't beat this team in a big game. I don't know. I can't explain it because it, to me, the Giants are just as bad as every other team in the NFC East.
Well, we got to give a little bit of kudos here. Eli Manning was just as good, if not, well, some people might say he was actually a little bit better than Tom Brady. Eli Manning was 24-44 for 361 yards. He as well had an 8 yard per completion average.
Remember, though, he had that big 85 yard pass to Beckham in the early part of the game.
That's going to
skew his number, you know, that average for pass right away when you get an 85 yard pass on the first drive of the game.
Sure. 96.9, though, quarterback rating throughout. And look, let's just for a moment. I mean, Eli Manning right now, quietly ranked the number 6 quarterback in the entire league in yardage at 2,700 yards for the season. He's got 21 touchdowns versus 6 interceptions. These aren't shabby numbers that the Giants are putting up this season. Eli Manning is quietly having a very nice season on, I want to say a bad team, but hey, they're the NFC East leading team at 5-5. I believe the Giants, are the Giants on bye finally this week? I believe they might be. Yes, they are. The Giants are on bye finally. Is this the last bye week, or do we have one more?
I think there's one more.
I think we go to week
12. Yeah, and then we're done.
Or do we go to week 12 or 11? Okay.
I think it's 12.
Well, next week is Thanksgiving. No, I don't believe we do. I think this is it. Next week will be Thanksgiving week. Yeah, no, I think this is it. This is the last bye week. But anyhow, so you got to give it. You got to give a little bit there. But this game, you know, you almost ought to just put the Giants. If the Patriots have to play the Giants in any given season, just put them right into the AFC East, because we know that the Patriots are always going to have a fight against anybody they play inside their own division. And if they got to play the Giants, you might as well just add them to their own division, because that's the way it just seems right now. I don't know. It's crazy. You know, that game, what was the spread on that game? Come on, Brandon, it was like 7 points. It was.
Yeah, 7 or 8 or 9 maybe.
It was in
New York, rather. So, yeah, it was probably closer to 7.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Well, anyhow, that's what went down there between the New England Patriots and the Giants. And the Patriots still preserve their perfect 9-0 season. A team that was trying to keep their perfect 9-0 season were the Cincinnati Bengals Monday night against the Houston Texans. That didn't happen, despite the fact it looked like going into this one late into the game, I really thought Cincinnati was going to pull this one off. Dalton came up short in the last drive, took it to 4 downs and just couldn't get the first down to get, you know, that what he really, really needed to get that first down. I don't know. They had their chances. There was no doubt about this one. Houston won it 10-6. In what sounded like it could have been a real snoozer, but I don't know. I wasn't snoozing. It kept me. I was alert through the whole game. Not a lot of offense, but and I think it had to be probably one of Dalton's probably lesser performances we've seen all season long, Brandon, as he only threw for 197 yards. It didn't have a single touchdown in the entire game. Had one interception. 22 of 38 he was. 61.0 passer rating on that one. Over on the opposite side, Houston, Brian Hoyer, and had to bring T.J. Yates in. And at that point, everybody, I guess, was sitting back going, okay, well, this is going to be Cincinnati's time to pounce. But never happened. Never materialized. Cincinnati just had it was a stinker, right? That's all it was.
Yeah, I can't really explain it. You know, maybe it was a look-ahead game in the middle of a bunch of division games like we were saying earlier, because I don't think Houston is, you know, going anywhere. You look at the numbers on Houston, you almost want to say, how did they win? I mean, Hoyer's numbers are unimpressive. They don't have any running back with any kind of numbers. It's like, how did they win the game? I think the answer to the question is I think Cincinnati just lost the game more so than Houston winning. Houston just endured. And, you know, that's the long and short of it.
It was a very defensive game, that I will say. There were, in fact, yes. I'm trying to get the next level. Let me get the next level stats on this one. I wanted to see how many first downs there were. This is exactly what I thought. Brandon, we had a whopping total between the two teams of 19 first downs. That was it. There were 10 first downs for the Texans, 9 for Cincinnati. It was a very, very defensive game.
Neither team had a lot of turnovers either, though. There was one interception each side and only one lost fumble in the whole game. So you would think defensive games, there should be more turnovers, you know, and I think maybe, you know, you just said it. They just both played really good defense and stopped the team when they had to. I would imagine both punters were probably pretty busy in this game. I don't have the punting stats directly in front of me, but
the box score stats on this game, Brandon, are just stupid. Excuse me. How even they are. First downs, 10 for Texans, 9 for the Bengals. Rushing first downs, 4 for the Texans, 5 for the Bengals. Third down efficiency, 5 of 15 for the Texans, 4 of 14 for the Bengals. I mean, it's keep going. Total plays, 61-62. 61 for the Texans, 62 for the Bengals. Total yards, 256 for the Texans, 256 for the Bengals. Total drives, 12 for the Texans, 11 for the Bengals. Every single stat you look at, you go down the board, it is even all the way down. It's stupid. Absolutely stupid. How even
I think
this
it's
game
just,
was.
It's a flat Cincinnati team who, you know, is in the middle of a, you know, bunch of division games, and I think that's just going to be one they have to, you know, maybe they can use it, as I said, Green Bay needs as a wake-up call. Maybe this will be Cincinnati's wake-up call, and they'll, you know, go on a run from here. I still think Cincinnati's a great team this year. They're really playing good ball. We've watched a lot of their games.
I agree.
And, you know, Andy Dalton to A.J. Green is probably, if not the best, it's one of the best combinations in the league right now.
From
quarterback to receiver.
I think they're one of the more – and, you know, look, we started out the program this evening talking about the disparagement, the lack of parity in many respects. You know, it's a funny thing. For all of the arguments that can be made for, oh, well, there's parity in the league, you could make the argument if you wanted to. Well, really, there isn't. There's a lack of parity because you've got, you know, only a mere handful of teams up at the top who are really, really excellent, and then everybody else is absolutely mediocre. So that's not parity at all. But however, whatever argument you want to make for it, what I like about the Cincinnati Bengals this year, when you watch them, and as you pointed out, we've watched a lot of them, is they are a well-rounded team on both sides of the ball. Very, very well-balanced team. You know, a lot of times you watch a team, I'm trying to think of a couple of teams that fit into that description, where they're very, very good on one side of the ball, maybe a little bit less on the other, but they're still successful. I think the Colts are a good example of that when they're very, very good. But this Cincinnati team is very, very – I think of all the teams that are out there right now, I think they're probably one of the more well-rounded teams that we're looking at.
I would agree with you.
They got
four good receivers, two good running backs. You know, the tight end, Eifert, had a tough game this week, but he's been pretty good all year for them as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Cincinnati right now, I think they've got to be number one ranked in the league defensively in allowing the fewest points per game at 16.9. That's all they're allowing. They're only allowing 16.9 points per game. In fact, that is number one. That's number one in the league. So I mean, that's stupid. That is a team. That's a team that really, when it comes right down to it, you know, Brandon, I mean, you know, I know you're rooting for your New England Patriots, but I mean, that's a team that very well could be, some could make the argument, probably maybe should be representing the AFC in the Super Bowl. Just by mere virtue of the numbers.
Here's where I'll go with it. Since right now the New England has the bye and the number one seed. So, you know, I think if it goes through Foxborough, you know, if Andy Dalton wins a game or two and makes it that far, well, he'd have to win at least one game to if they get a, you know, a division and a bye, which it looks like they're going to be number two seed. So, you know, he got to win a game first, which he hasn't been able to do yet. Mm-hmm. I think, like I said, he's 0-6 in the playoffs. So, you know, let's get him one before we talk about him being the AFC representative.
Yep.
I mean, I think Tom Brady's kind of proved that, you know, the big game's not a big issue for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's, I would agree. I think he's proven it. real quick before we start.
He's lost more Super Bowls than Dalton's made playoff games.
Before we start to wrap it up, we'll just touch very briefly on the, on one of your favorite teams, that's the Miami Dolphins. Who came into Philadelphia and beat the Philadelphia Eagles last week, 20-19. And just, I guess, for mere purposes of window dressing, I'll give you a couple of quick numbers. Sam Bradford was 19-25 for 236 yards. He had a touchdown, no interceptions. And a 118.1 passer rating, which wasn't half bad. In fact, I'm going to be honest with you, Brandon. I thought Bradford looked the best that I had seen him in any game up to that point. That was before he went out injured. Enter Mark Sanchez, went 14-23 for 156. And that crushing interception that killed the Eagles' chances of winning the game. Tannehill was okay. 21 of 36, 217 yards, two touchdowns. A lot of people beginning. I think this game began to really epitomize how much or how many people in the Philadelphia fan base are really beginning now to question Chip Kelly. I'm not a big fan. I never have been. I never wanted Chip Kelly here in Philadelphia to begin with. I've been on record many, many times right here on this program and on others dating back to prior to 3 years ago when he came in that I never wanted Chip Kelly here in Philadelphia. So I have no qualms about that. What do you make of this mess that is the Philadelphia Eagles team? Many who thought that, oh, this was a team that was going to go to the Super Bowl this year. What? I don't even know where to begin with it.
Well, you know, if you think about it from the beginning of the year on, I mean, they changed all their key players on offense. I mean, you take LeSean McCoy, Nick Foles, Jeremy Maclin, they're all gone. Now we got DeMarco Murray. Mark Sanchez instead of Bradford. And yep. Sanchez has been an interception machine. The big problem that I think they have is they're not using their players correctly. And I think Ryan Matthews has shown he's a better runner in this offense than Murray, and yet they still give the bulk of the carries to Murray. And I think that's part of the problem. I think they need to change up the way they're distributing touches, especially with Sanchez being in there. You know, I know you probably like him, and I have not liked him, and I have never liked anything about his game because he always throws. He's an interception machine, and he's just going to kill any chance the Eagles had, you know, at this point. I think they had a far better team last year with the other pieces that they got rid of, and the way they're not using what they have now properly, you know. Chip Kelly seems to be very stubborn and thinks he can just, you know, throw whatever the hell he wants out there and it's going to win. And it just doesn't work like that in the NFL. You know, you gotta play to people's strengths. And I hate to keep going to New England, but Belichick would never do what Chip Kelly's doing. He always puts his players in the best position to perform well, you know, and I don't think Chip Kelly's doing that.
We have heard for quite a few years that, well, at least some people have tried to paint Chip Kelly as being kind of a Belichick protege, that they're such good buddies and good. This goes back to Chip Kelly's Rhode Island days and all this other nonsense. And frankly, I don't give a damn about any of it, to be perfectly honest with you. My attitude is, I'm kind of a Missourian. Show me. That's where I'm coming down on this one. And a guy didn't show me anything. I was never impressed with him when he was at Oregon. So I'm not impressed with him now with this regard. But, you know, Brandon, one of the things that strikes me as being completely opposite of Belichick is that Kelly seems to constantly come back with the exact same game plan from one game to the next. You never see that from Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick comes in with a completely different game plan from one week to the next. We have seen it just within the course of this year. Excuse me, you'll see it next year. We've seen it for years before this. So that's one of the things that just I do not understand. You talk about putting players in the right position. I don't know what he thinks he's doing. I don't know if he thinks that this is still college or not. I mean, I hear that argument made all the time. I don't know.
No, I think at this point, you know, if things don't change, he's going to lose the locker room. You know, I don't think, you know, that act's going to play in the NFL long term. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-mm-mm. Well, I guess we're going to see on that one. We'll see how this goes. excuse me. All right. Well, there you have it. We've kind of just run right out of time here this evening. But fear not. We will be right back here with you tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time for our flagship program, the Frat House Sports Show. 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You want to be here for that one. We'll be getting into a whole bunch of things. Yeah, you can imagine that one. There'll be a lot of NFL topics on the docket. There'll be our picks of the week. We've kind of given you a little bit of a preview as to what some of them might be. We'll get into some of that. We'll be joined in as well by our good friend Matt Nabiaz. We'll be talking a little NBA and a little NHL action as well. 4 minutes of football will be in there. Kind of alluded to that one as well. And then on Friday night, you want to be here at 8 p.m. Eastern time for myself and for Nick Swartz and, well, whoever else we've got on the docket. Could be Bobby G. Could be our new buddy Phil. Could be Caleb. I'm not sure just exactly yet. But one thing I know is we will be talking a little fantasy football. We will be doing that one at 8 p.m. Eastern time on Friday evening. Be here for our Frat House Sports' Fantasy Friday program. For everybody that's been listening in this evening, many, many thanks to all of you as well. And, you know what you got to do? Is there any sports on tonight? Oh, there has to be. Go find a hockey game. Yeah, got to be a hockey game on, you would think, huh?
Oh, yeah.